Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
. 2019 is Heritage Radio Network's 10th birthday, and we've got a lot to celebrate. We need your support to bring you another year of the best in food radio. Help HRN ring in its second decade by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com. Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, so I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. We normally do a show from our studio in Brooklyn, but today we'll broadcast an episode of Manga Sensei, which is one of the most popular Japanese language learning podcasts. The host, Joan Dinkel, majored in Japanese language in college and lived in Japan for a while as well, so he has deep experience in Japanese language and culture. If you're willing to learn Japanese, I suggest that you subscribe to Joan's super approachable and effective podcast, Manga Sensei, on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. John kindly invited me to his podcast as a guest, and we had a fun conversation about Japanese food culture. Hope you'll find this episode a nice little window to peek into Japanese mindset and culture.
Yo, 皆さん、Manga Sensei Podcast へようこそ。 Hey everybody and welcome back to the Manga Sensei Podcast. I'm your host, John Sensei, and today, like every day, I'm breaking down the world's best language. And today I'm talking to one of the movers and shakers in the Japanese community. She is a world-renowned, I don't know, you're world-renowned a lot of things. You are a writer, you have been on television, you conduct the Japanese Food Society in New York. You are a podcaster. What don't you do? It might be a better question.
I'm blushing. I don't know. I have some words, whatever. But but thank you.
You might do a better job, Akiko. Why don't you tell the audience who you are?
I am a writer, specialized in food and beverage. I've been covering New York City and American food scenes, and as well as I am a podcast and radio show host and producer at the Heritage Radio Network, which is based in New York. And I write for Forbes magazine, other English publications, actually Forbes.com, that's an online version. And right. I do consulting for the Japanese government and the Japanese food business industry, all about eating and drinking.
Which is a huge part of culture in and of itself. Akiko is an amazing writer, a fantastic podcaster. This is one of the few of the podcasts that I have on my personal podcast list. Like, I will openly tell you my podcast list. I have Japan History, I have Tokyo Podcast, I have your podcast, Japan Eats, and then I also have Tim Ferriss podcast and a Japanese podcast about startups in Japanese that I really like listening to.
Thank you. So, yeah, I forgot to say my podcast and radio show is called the Japanese. Thank you for saying that.
Of course. And if you haven't checked it out yet, everything we talk about here, as well as her podcast and all of her links, will be put down below in the show notes. So if you want to go check her out and all the wonderful things she's doing, in fact, some of the fun things that she'll be doing here soon as well will also be listed there, so you can connect with her. She's fantastic, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy this interview. But to start off, I do have to ask you an important question. Why food?
Because it's the, I think, the biggest common denominator for among human society, like everybody, even animals. So if you talk about food, everybody's eyes start to sparkle and you make friends. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the reason I think it's interesting.
And it's one of those, I think it's one of those things as well that not only brings people together and makes their eyes sparkle, but it's also comforting. Everyone likes food. There's nothing controversial that much about food. And it's really just something that, there's no bad part about food that I can really think of, unless you eat too much of it.
That could happen often, but but also I think we have to, you know, eat every day. Everybody's every day. And that's why it's always the center of culture in any society, I think.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, I actually learned something the other day. I was watching some kind of documentary, I believe, and it was Alton Brown made a comment, and it really surprised me. He told me a statistic. He said after 9/11... in the United States, New York, they had the biggest boom on the Food Channel. Because after that terrible thing happened, no one wanted to watch the news. No one wanted to watch, you know, the political stuff. No one wanted to watch football. What they wanted was something simple and good and happy. And what could be better good and happy than food?
Right. Interesting, because I still remember right after, you know, 9/11, all those expensive restaurants are gone. Then what came out really popular was very comforting, you know, interior, owners are really friendly, and food is to be shared. And everything changed after 9/11, in that sense, for the better. So it's more sharing, it's more comforting, like you said. So, yeah, you're right. Very important part to make your life happier, more relaxing, and physically make your energy too.
Yeah, I agree. And it's something that a lot of people, I talk to people about going to Japan and learning Japanese, since this is a kind of a Japanese-focused podcast, they always ask me when you go to Japan, the first thing you learn is you learn how to introduce yourself, and then you learn your favorite things, and you learn your favorite food. And of course, when you first go to Japan, you don't know what your favorite foods are. Heck, you don't know what any of the foods are outside of sushi, and maybe, like, I don't know. I think some people know chicken katsu or something.
Right, or ramen, of course.
Ramen, of course. But the ramen they've had is kappo ramen, which really shouldn't count.
Yeah, that's more like, That's not. I mean, maybe, but you know, well, it could be. Depending on
it's
who
true.
You are. Right. Yeah.
Right. So if someone listening right now is thinking about they're just starting to kind of get adventurous with their food, or they want to get more into Japanese food, where do you recommend they start? I mean, they have this whole world they really haven't explored yet, and if they wanted to start in this, where would they go?
Well, that's an interesting question. Right, like, everybody's knows sushi right now, but I heard after World War II, everybody's scared of eating raw fish. So I would, if you just land in Japan, like, or Tokyo or Osaka, anywhere, you just go to a convenience store, because even 7-Eleven in Japan, they are a treasure box. It's really sandwiches to bento. It's everything so high quality. And you can get any of those things from, I don't know, $1 to $5, and you really have a good meal. So you can see the food, and you can taste anything you want at the lower cost. And then that's the beginning of the adventure.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I first found some of the treasures at the convenience store, I think it was Family Mart, and I found chocolate chip melon pan.
Mm. Ooh, I missed that. I do miss that.
Oh, it's so good.
Mm. Yeah, the other thing is that, you know, bakeries. So, if you're still scared of trying eating Japanese traditional food, if you go to bakery, people say that's better than even Europe. And they have their own Japanese version of the pastries. And Japanese bread is fluffier and kind of flavored, sweeter. So maybe that's another way to go.
Yeah, I think that's really, I think particularly for like maybe a American or even my Australian audience, it's kind of easy to go from, you know, breads to trying Japanese bread. Try the sandwiches, try their croissants, try their little things that are covered in wonderful, glorious, drizzly wonderfulness. It's this is going to be the hungriest I have ever been while recording a podcast.
Yeah. Well, that's funny because I first thing I do when I land in Japan, I have a big taste memory of Japanese, anpan. It's a stuffed,
red bean.
Yeah, just bread, fluffy Japanese style bread, and I like the Yamazaki brand for some reason. And that's the first thing. I just go straight to the convenience store. I get it. And at the hotel room, I bite into it. I'm back home.
Let's see. The first thing I usually get off the plane, honestly, the last time I went to Japan last year, the first thing that I did when I went into the country is I walked into the convenience store. I got myself some momosui. Mm. And I also bought myself an onigiri, just a tsunamayo.
Oh. Yeah, by the way, you know the wrapping of onigiri and convenience store. I had this one guy who developed, you know, separating rice and nori seaweed so that nori doesn't get wet and sticky. So he got the patent, and it's every time someone eats it, he's just like making money, even a cent or something.
Holy
really
smokes.
So yeah, that's
that guy is probably the world's smartest guy, because it's true. You have to like tear the package along a line, and then it like pulls it out, and then the nori, the seaweed, touches the rice for the first time, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah, and I really think that that's the really symbolic invention of Japanese mindset. Once you think, wow, there's something I want to improve, think of it, right? That's pretty.
Right.
I think it's a pretty complicated process. They made it as a product easy to operate, but who would come up? I'm sure there are a thousand trials and errors and to come up with that product.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's really the course of it, is Japanese are really good at taking things, improving upon them, and not only taking that, but definitely somehow it just becomes more Japanese when it gets taken into that country and gets adopted into Japan. Japan doesn't just take things and adopt it. Japan takes things and absorbs them.
Mm. So I think for the better or worse, it's an obsession. So that's the nature of Japanese personality, I think.
And I think that's actually a perfect segue to talking a little bit about the personality of food as it comes not only from west to east, but also from east to west as it comes into the United States. You're famous for logging in the food scene, especially in New York, and for being really on top of that ball there. But if I were to kind of jump on the front edge of the Japanese food scene, where would I find myself right now?
In America, you mean?
Yes.
I think the United States is just the United States, means I think that depending on where you go, you see different things. But beyond sushi and ramen, in New York City, I think expensive kaiseki restaurants are thriving, like check average $250 or something like that. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but there is a group of diners who can appreciate the delicacy of classic kaiseki cuisine. And also, if you go to Kyoto, I'm sure a lot of people already experienced Kyoto kaiseki cuisine. So they want to find the same thing. So it's really the result of global movement. Everybody travels, everybody can find information over the internet. So I think it's exciting, although I wish prices are a little lower.
Yeah, you know, I remember when I had Kaiseki for the first time, and just it's amazing not only the attention to detail, because I think that's what a lot of people touch on for like the first time they try Kaiseki, because there's, I mean, everything's in season, everything is sourced from a particular place, and those every little part has been thought of when it comes to Kaiseki, right?
Mm.
But the part that really really surprised me was I went to it was a very small restaurant in Nagoya. And the chef was a gentleman. He was a Zainichi Kankokujin. Mm. And he was a very, very entertaining gentleman. Just hilarious. And it was almost, he would sat behind this little bar, and there were probably like seven of us in the restaurant. And he went to each person and made the food. But there was also like something, he talked about how he thought about it and what, and he told jokes along the thing. It was a wonderful experience for me, being introduced to that high level of culture for the first time. But also seeing the mixture as Japan not only is unified in food, but also the specificity of just the food in Nagoya.
Mm, right. So that's the thing, right? We say kaiseki, but if you go to Kyoto, kaiseki is different from kaiseki in Tokyo, because, like, for instance, mm-hmm. there are about 40 different Kyoto-specified vegetables, kyoyasai. Yeah. And kaiseki, like you said, it's all about seasonality and the local. Mm-hmm. Like local sustainable ingredients. So yeah, that's right. Regionality is really a big part of Japanese cuisine. So that's why I think people should get out of Tokyo and then try to find new different fish or vegetables or whatever you find.
What do you think is a particular hidden gem in Japan when it comes to Japanese food that most people won't probably think of outside of course, like ramen and sushi?
That's a big question. Well, it's if you go to izakaya, right, you get to see a whole bunch of different things, and mm-hmm. That you can find at someone's house, you know, table at someone's house. So it's, I don't know, it's a classic names of dishes like yakiniku, yakitori, outside sushi and ramen, there are things mm-hmm. you started to see in this United States or in other countries outside Japan. But I think the essence of what's not known is the regional cuisine. Even if I travel, like say,
right.
you know, just the Japan seaside, which is different from Pacific Ocean.
Oh, yeah.
And you find something like Nodogoro, which is a very specific fish, you can only find it in the Japan seaside. So those things, I think, is more interesting. And also, if you have miso soup, if you go to different region, Nagoya has mami miso, which is bean based. And yes, you go to, so different, variations. So miso soup can be completely different from the east to west. Those little things, but significant differences that we really represent the cultural diversity within Japan. So I think it's something I really want people to experience and see.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. I think once you explore a little bit outside of Kanto, and you get a little bit outside of like Osaka, and Kansai is wonderful. I love the Kansai area particularly. Mm. But once you venture a little bit beyond that and go to Nagano, go to Tohoku, go to Sapporo, when you venture into, Hiratakayama or wherever you are, and finding, what are called the tokusanhin, the specialty things in that area, is that's when you kind of get the quintessence of life in Japan.
Right. Yeah, like, when it comes to sake and shochu, if you go to Kyushu, you have plenty of amazing shochu because that's where it's produced. And whereas you go to Niigata, they have a different style of sake called the Niigata Tanle, which is lighter and a cleaner version of sake versus other regions.
Right.
So I think it's really fun to discover the regional diversity in Japan.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think if I could give any advice to people listening right now, it would be leave the big city for a second and go have food at a small restaurant on the side of a road in the middle of nowhere, and they'll have good food, and that's to make sure it's local food or whatever you're looking for. But just even this is the difference in basic ramen from place to place. I'm not the biggest foodie in the world. My wife is a crazy foodie, but she's, I mean, just having not only the food but the experience there is something that you can't replicate.
Right, indeed.
Okay, so one more thing before we jump to, I for people who follow this podcast, I try to do things in kind of two halves, one in English half and one kind of Japanese half. And before we jump to the Japanese half, I do want to talk about where you're going to be on Netflix.
Oh.
Just for a quick second.
Okay, so there's going to be a food competition, like, you know, world famous chefs compete over 10 episodes. Which is coming out in November. The title is The Final Table. And I'll be a judge on a Japan episode. So, yeah. So hopefully your listeners can take a look and enjoy the episode. And also, I mean, I'm sure it's a good, really good, great whole 10 episodes would be amazing. So
I'm super excited. And I you don't have to give us any spoilers, because I know you probably can't give us any spoilers. But is there anything that they should maybe watch for or maybe pay attention to?
Well, I think there are 10 episodes, meaning each episode has different theme. And I mean, like UK or Spain or you know, Mexico, and Japan is one of them. So, yeah, the Japanese episode features certain cuisine, which I cannot say right now.
Right, of course, but, I understand.
Yeah, but you learn the culture, I hope. And I'm sure, I mean, other episodes as well. So,
That's awesome. And I will, again, put that down in the show notes down below. As long as that, when it gets out, I'll make sure to put a post on the website, mangadestinzi.com, where you can check that out as well, which will be super, super fun. I'm excited. I love watching Japanese food being made. And only thing I like more than that is eating it, because I'm really good at eating Japanese food.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah, so the show is, again, called The Final Table. So hope your audience can enjoy it.
Next year, Heritage Radio Network is turning 10. For the last decade, we've been committed to bringing listeners around the world the very best in food radio, for free. Our small staff and incredible network of hosts work hard so that listeners can tune in each week to hear the important conversations in food policy, stay on the cutting edge of cocktail culture, and hear the latest updates in food tech. But there is no HRN without the support of listeners like you. Become a member of Heritage Radio Network today and help HRN get a strong start to our second decade. Choose from exclusive member gifts and stay in the loop on discounts to upcoming events. There's no better time to show your support. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and wish HRN a happy birthday.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
With that, now, if you are a new listener to the podcast, I am going to go into full Japanese here. We're going to just touch on English at the very, very end to kind of talk, to summarize what we talked about, give a gaio. But If you are a new learner of Japanese, don't be afraid of this part of the podcast. It's a great opportunity to listen and do some practice. If you are wonderful at Japanese and are better than me, which is very, very likely, this is a great opportunity to hear a native speaker speak, as well as talk on some interesting topics. And if you're somewhere in between where the most of us are, it's great practice to be able to see how sentences kind of form together. So don't be afraid. And if you are afraid, you can skip right till the end and kind of go back from there. But with that, Akiko-san.
はい、日本語で。
はい、お願いします。
はい。
それでですね、最近、Forbes Online と始めたんですね。
はい、コントリビューとして、はい、Forbes 氏にも、日本の食文化の担当なので、いろいろカバーしないといけないんですけど。
えらいですね、本当にこのフォーブスの職で書いて始めてあったんですよ、実は。
あ、そうですか。
大人気がありますね、ガキコさん。
まあでも、やっぱりそれだけその日本料理の、日本の食文化に関心があるっていうことですよね、はい、そういう仕事をこう、
ね、
もらえたというのは。
そうですね、最近の記事なんですけれども、このうまみに関するですね。
はい、
それで昔何の味があったのか、やはり峰がなんか見えること座ることたちですね。そしてでも味わおうって辛いに長い、ね、苦い甘みとかそういう味があったんですけど、特別日本で見つけたうまみという味は一体何でしょうか？
うまみというのは、こちらで言うとそのセイボリーとか、まあそのフィフステイストっていう、はい、まあこれまでその、まあ西洋の社会ではあえて名前がなかったものを、その、まあ池田キュガイ博士っていう、
はい、
科学者が発見されたのが、何年でしたっけ、ちょっと記事が忘れちゃった。1800何年か。で、まあでもそれは、たまたまその昆布の出汁の中に旨味っていうものが存在するっていうのを、こう科学的に分析したのが、まあその池内博士で。でも、実際トマトとか、パルメザンチーズとか、まあいろんなものに旨味っていうのがあるんですよね。だから、
うん、
その辺がやっぱり、そのうまみっていうのはたまたま日本語ですけど、でそういう意味で、その、まあ、うまみという言葉が広がっていくっていうのは、まあ、大事なことですよね。というのは、その、うまみっていう言葉を意識してると、はい、その、他の、まあ、例えば、なんか物足りないなと思って、お塩かけても、まだ足りない。もっとお塩かけても、まだ足りない。でも、はい、ちょっとこう、その、お塩の皮にうまみの成分を足すと、ちょっとこうチーズをかけるとか、それだけで、うん、体にも優しく美味しいものが食べられるっていう、うん、まあそういうところがうまみですね、きっと。
そうですね、これを初めて聞くのは、やはりに日本でしたが、そういう言葉がアメリカの外来語になって、すごいアメリカの料理文化にインパクトがありましたね。
うん、そうですね。まあでも今、そのうまみっていうのは、まあ、だしっていう言葉がありますよね。特にラーメンのだしとか、はい、最近よく聞きますけど、はい、で、だしっていうのはそのうまみのもとで、で、大体昆布と、その、はい、昆布と鰹節。で、昆布、はい、ドライドボニーとフレース。
Yes.
で、それはやっぱり合わさると、こう、うまみは、相乗効果、そのシナジーがあるので、まあ、はい、ますますそのうまみが高まって、それでも、だしっていうのが和食の基本になってる
ん
ですよね。そういう意味では、その、だしを使わない和食の料理っていうのはほとんどないぐらいだし、はい、なので、そういう意味では、そのうまみっていうのは和食のもう、ファンデーションになってるっていうふうに、思っていいと思うんですよね。
はい、それでもう一度特産品の話にも、戻るんですけれども、東京には昔特産品がありましたね。それでもまだあるでしょうか？東京がそれがあるかちょっとわからないですね。
なんでしょうね。
すごい、あの東京が日本一帯の料理に入ってあるかもしれないですので、あの東京の特産品は一体何でしょうか。
それは何でしょうね。まあでもそういう意味では江戸前寿司。お寿司
ってことない、そういう
江戸前って、その江戸って昔の東京の名前ですよね。
そうですね、はい、
で東京が江戸だった頃に、はい、江戸前、そのお寿司っていうのは、今の握り寿司っていうのは東京で生まれたんですよね、
はい、あ、そうですか。握り寿司はそうでした。
そうなんですね。江戸前っていうのはその前はその before ですよね、うん、
はい、
で東京湾、東京ベイの before 東京ベイっていうので江戸前の寿司っていうのは、その、
そういう作り方は江戸前って言うんですか。その、その握りは、あの江戸前寿司ですか。
そう、握り寿司イコール江戸前寿司のことです。そうなんです。
初めて聞きました。
うん、だから関西ではあの握り寿司って言ったら江戸前っていうのは、厳密に言うと間違い。はい、
面白いですね。
うん、そうなんです。
あのやはり各々のところに行くと、あの特別特産品とか、あの特別あの懐石みたいな料理があるんですけれども、そういう大きな都市、特に東京と大阪、特別の料理があるのか、あのすごいあの印象がありますね。あの日本の基礎にあの設立するし、あの海外にも東京に行って日本はどの料理があるのか少し紹介してくれるんですね。
やっぱりそうですね。そのさっきも言ったように、その地方の料理って本当に面白いし、はい、その例えば大阪のそのお好み焼きとか焼きそばとか、そのカジュアルなその商人、はい、いわゆるその、はい、まあコマースが発展した時に生まれた一般大衆の、はい、そのジェネラルパブリックのこう生み出した安くて美味しい料理っていうのがやっぱり大阪にはいっぱいありますよね。
そうですね。
うん、
でもそれがあのやはり話が2つあるんですね。こういう話で、あの外国、あの日本の、あの外国に向かっている料理と日本の以内に向かっている料理ですね。あのやはり外国人に考え、日本の料理に考えていると、やはり寿司とラーメンについても話し合ったんですけれども、あの日本の以内、特別と決まっている料理もありますね。例えばおせちとか。
そうですね。まあ、おせちも海外で作るとすごく高いですよね。
なんか確かにそうですね。
うん、
もういくつともあるんですよ。なんか12ぐらいですね、おせちって。
うん、やっぱり
伊達巻きとか、
そう、全部買うとなんか200ドルとかになっちゃいますよね、きっと。まあでもおせちって、あのリスナーの方ご存知でしょうか。その、お正月の、うん、はい、最初の3日間はその家庭の主婦、うん、ハウスワイフがもう何にもしなくていい、はい、料理しなくていいようにお休みできるように、
お餅ですね。
あ、そう、おせちとお餅とお雑煮、はい、だからそのおせちっていうのはこう弁当ボックスみたいな、そのお重っていう重ねた弁当ボックスに詰まってますよね、はいはいはい、でそれはその3日間そのしっかり料理が、あの濃い味付けになっているので、まあ、はい、その主婦が、そのハウスワイフが、その3日間、もう、うん、そのお正月3日間をお祝いするだけで、厨房に、キッチンに立たなくてもよくてっていう、そのためのお料理なので、うん、やっぱり、はい、そう、種類も多いし、でも、それ作るのに1週間ぐらいかかるんですよね。全部
確かにそうですね。アメリカは在客ですね。アメリカの感謝祭とか Thanksgiving に考えてると、あの家内がよくなんか料理を作ってくれて、ずっと料理したりベーキングしたり、そしてあの Thanksgiving のみんなが食べる一緒に、ただ家内が休むだけで。
そう、いいことですよね、それは。
それであの日本のなんかおせちに考えてると、なんか年越しそばとかあるんですね。
うん、そうですね。 まあでもおせちと一緒に、まあ、年越しっていうのはその、はい、まあ日本人にとってお正月、そのニューイヤーっていうのは、はい、やっぱりその今年の運命を決める、だからそのラッキーな年にしたければ、はい、少しでもこう縁起がいい、縁起がいい、そのラッキー、はい、ラッキーチャームみたいな、そういう
ラッキーチャームみたいな、はい、そうですね、
そういうその料理の中でも、例えばそのまあなんだろう、まあその年越しそばを例にとると、こう長い、長く伸びますよね、はい、おそばって長いから、長生きする、はい、ロングライフとロングヌードルスっていう、そういう意味を込めて年越しそばを食べるとか、なんかいろいろこう文化的な意味が一つ一つにあるんですよね、はい、お正月のお料理には。
はい、それは本当にあの日本に特別にあるんですね、あのおせちとか、あのそういうあの季節による料理が変わってくる
ん
ですね。あのやはりなんか夏の間、夏の間やはりなんかそうめんとか食べれるし、そしてあの冬になってしまうと、あの正月に来るとあのおせちとかそれもありますし、でも日本が特別に季節を気にしていますね。
そうですね。やっぱりそのアメリカのようにこう消費社会、まあ、コンスーマーサイドってみんな言いますけど、そういうその豊かな、はい、特にそのまあ、はい、ね、第一次ワールドワー2の後にこう、はい、豊かになったような社会じゃなかったですよね。日本ってその小さいし、 その資源もないし、はい、だから何でも無駄にしなくて季節のものをこう食べて、でたくさん取れたものは全部こう加工食品のプロセスフードにして、はい、その漬物ピコスとか、なんかそういうふうにこう、はい、無駄のない、食生活、まあ、つましいってこう、はい、なんかプアって言いますけど、フルーガンな、そういうやっぱり日本の食文化、無駄にしない、何もこう、nothing is wasted っていう、そういう形が、すごく日本の伝統の食生活の中にあると思うんですよね。だから、はいはい、それはやっぱり季節のものを食べることによって、その、まあ、生活が成り立っていき、その季節のものへのこう感謝とか、その、まあ、敬意とか、そういう、なんだろう、その、バウンティー、ネイチャーって、そういうところにすごくこう価値観を見出しているのが日本人だと思うんです。
はい。そうですね。もう、お腹空いてきました。
私も空いてきました。
日本のコンビニでも結構ですね、今のところで。
そうですね。いや、でも日本のコンビニ本当にいいですよね。美味しい。
でも日本のコンビニってアメリカのコンビニは全然違うですね。あのアメリカのコンビニってただなんかガスですね。ガスとなんかスラーピーなんかソーダも飲めるんですけど、それお酒もあるんですが、日本ではなんかベーカリーみたいな、なんかお菓子もいっぱいあってお酒もあるんですけど、何でもコンビニで買えるみたいだ。
そうですね。
びっくりするほど。
本当にあの質のいいものも売ってるし、例えば、はい、爪切り、そのネイルクリッパー一つ買ってもすごくいい質のものが安く買えたりとか、はい、コンビニは楽しいですね。
なかなか楽しいですね。
うん、
じゃあそろそろ終わらせないといけないですので、あの最後にはあのもしあのあのこのイズに話し合ったんですけれども、あの間違いの話ですね、
はい、
あの僕の観客じゃなくて、あの来ていらっしゃる観客になるたい人が多分いるので、あのでも日本の料理でも日本語のお話でもちょっと怖いに考えてしまうかもしれないので、あのこのポッドキャストの前に話し合ったんですけど、そういう間違いについて、そしてどう避けるというわけないですけど、そういう間違いに考えているとどう思いますか、
さん。それはですね、あのやっぱり、まあ、特に日本人の人ってあの多分
ですね、
日本人の完璧主義ってあると思うんですよ。私 も日本で英語勉強して、はい、で、まあ試験も一緒に、はい、まあみんなすごく勉強してるから、本当は話そうと思えば話せると思うんですけど、はい、やっぱり話さない。で、それはまあ多分日本人でもアメリカ人でも何人でも、やっぱりこう間違いは怖いですよね。はい、でも、 それそういう考え、私はもう全然間違いを恐れないくなったのは、そのまあニューヨークに引っ越してきた時に、
はい、
まあ両親とこうコミュニケーションを取るにはファックスしかなかったんです、はい、その当時っていうのはうちの両親メールをやらなかったので、はい、Eメールがなくて、はい、で文章で伝えたい時はファックスしかなかったんですよね。
はい、
ね、でそのまあ電話会社が何かの間違いでこうそのファックスをの伝達を切ってしまったんです。で、はい、まあ私はちょっとこう、まあ戸惑うわ、激怒するわで、で、はい、まあ電話会社にこう、まあ電話したんですよね。で、その時私はもうニューヨークに来たばっかりだったし、はい、その前はその、まあイギリスに住んでて、その時も多分日本な、日本人のアクセントもあれば、はい、イギリスの英語のアクセントもあって、なんかもう、もうどうしていいかわからない。でも、やっぱりこう、必死になると、もう物事をこう、伝えて、で、決着をつけるっていうことができるようになるんですよね。だから、はい、もう、なせばなるって日本語のそのフレーズがありますけど、まあ、
はい、
言葉なんて道具であって、物が片付けばいい。
はい、
ゲリッダンで、それができるっていうことに、その経験を通じて学んで、もう、間違いは全然恐れていません。
そうですね。間違いは進歩ということが理解すればするほど自分が進行ができるということですね。
うん、本当にそうですよね。で、やっぱり間違えると、その、人の間違えている気持ちもわかるし、人にも優しくなれるし、なんかそういう意味で、こう、はい、まあ人生豊かになっていくんじゃないかと思いながら間違いを繰り返して、全然、はばからないですけど。はい、
自分がパーフェクトにならないから自分ができる限りパーフェクトにしましょう。
うん、そうですよね。まあ言葉ってやっぱりただのツールじゃないですか。
うん、うん、そうですね。
そう。だから、
ただに言うと。
もう一人でも多くの人と出会って話をしてコミュニケーションができれば、やっぱりそれだけで十分だと思うんですよね。
はい、うん。僕もそう思います。これをポッドキャスト始めた時も、1年前ちょっとでしたが、そういう時に、あ、まあ今までにもまだ日本語流暢に話せないんですが、それが自分ができる、自分が日本人と直接話せる、他の外国人どうやって日本語を話せるのか、自分でできるから決まって、それだんだんこれはすごい楽しいな、プロジェクトになりましたね。
そうですよね。で、そして話していくと、その日本人が、大事にしているもの、例えばその日本人って直接に英語みたいにものを言わないですけど、でもそれはその相手へのリスペクトとか、はい、その、
そうですね。
うん。そういうことが、だんだんその、完璧じゃなくても、こう、言葉を交わすことによって伝わってきて、はい、うん。どんどんまた、相手のことがわかるようになる。だからもう、文法とか、
はい、
その知らない言葉とかっていうのは問題じゃなくて、そういうふうにこう伝えようとすると、うん、やっぱり本当の意味でコミュニケーションができるようになると思います。
はい、そうですね、
うん。
それはなかなかいい話だけではなくてアドバイスですね。ありがとうございます。
こちらこそありがとうございます。
それでは皆さん、I will have to end here, but thank you so much for listening. I really enjoyed having Akiko on. She's wonderful, and if you didn't get the whole thing there in Japanese, make sure to go back and go over places. I stuttered during my last question super, super bad, but that's okay, because we are all totally down for making mistakes, because it's after 10,000 mistakes that you become fluent, whether it's learning another language, whether it's learning about Japanese food culture or making food yourself. You have to make those mistakes to be able to move forward. With that, though, I will sign off. And Akiko, I'll give you the last word to everybody here on Manga Sensei.
So, again, language is just a tool. So then enjoy and go out and visit Japan and eat Japanese food.
Perfect. Yeah. And next time I'm in New York, you have to show me around.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there are crazy good Japanese restaurants here too. Plenty of them. So I look forward to having you here.
It'll be fun. You'll be waiting for me, I hope, at the airport, and we'll just go straight to the restaurant.
Sounds good.
Awesome. All right, 皆さん、これを覚えておきなさい。もし日本語でペリペリになりたいなら、間違いが必要なんです。ですから一緒に間違いましょう。それじゃあ、また明日。
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaeli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.